Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 24, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's president demands an end to what he calls illegal sanctions on his country.
Zimbabwe remains grateful to the SADC region, the African Union, and other progressive nations who continue to stand with us.
Tanzania's first female president says the burden of expectations to deliver gender equality is heavier on her shoulders. Liberia's president again says his government is committed to a process to heal the wounds of the victims of that country's civil war. Former Chadian President Issa Habre's victims inch closer to justice and reparations. Somalia and the African Union peacekeepers launch coordination center to aid fight against Al-Shabaab. And the UN says South Sudan is suffering from a human rights crisis of epic proportions.
The governors of Warrip State and Lake State ordered the summary execution of more than 56 individuals, including minors. These extrajudicial killings orchestrated by governors from the ruling party may constitute crimes against humanity.
And Uganda opposition leader Bobi Wine says he was stopped from traveling to the United States. The stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has again demanded the removal of what he calls illegal and unjustified sanctions imposed by the United States and the European Union on his country. The U.S. imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe in 2001 under the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, following that country's land reform program in 2000 and subsequently because of government-sponsored violence, undemocratic practices, and human rights abuses. The regional group in Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, has established October 25th as the SADC Anti-Sanction Solidarity Day. Speaking virtually on Thursday to the 76th session of the UN General Assembly, President Mnangagwa said the sanctions have further made it difficult for Zimbabwe to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic.
The COVID-19 pandemic has increased the vulnerability of our economy, which is already crippled by the adverse effects of unilateral illegal sanctions imposed on my country. Sanctions have further questioned our capacity to respond to the pandemic for the good of our citizens. I'm pleased to highlight that my government has approved the visit in October 2021 to Zimbabwe by the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of the unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights. This will afford the Special Rapporteur an opportunity to witness firsthand the devastating impact of these illegal sanctions on my country. We reiterate our call for the urgent and conditional removal of these illegal sanctions. Zimbabwe remains grateful to the SADC region, the African Union, and other progressive nations who continue to stand with us and add their voices to the call for the unconditional removal of these unwarranted and unjustified illegal sanctions. We are committed to engagement and re-engagement and peaceful coexistence and to be a friend to all and an enemy to none as we build equal partnerships for win-win cooperation and a common future.
That was Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa speaking Thursday virtually to the 76th session of the UN General Assembly. The Zimbabwe leader also called for enhanced multilateralism and unity of purpose to mitigate COVID-19. He said what he calls vaccine nationalism is self-defeating and contrary to the notion that no one is safe until everyone is safe. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan says the burden of expectations to deliver gender equality is heavier on her shoulders as the country's first woman president. Speaking Thursday in New York at the 76th session of the UN General Assembly, President Suluhu Hassan said the COVID-19 pandemic is threatening to roll back the progress her country has made on gender equality and economic empowerment. But, she said, her government is reviewing policy and legal framework to come up with actionable and measurable plans to ensure economic empowerment of women and other aspects pertaining to gender equality and gender parity.
President, I wish to take note of the Secretary General's report on our common agenda, which raises key issues of our common concern, such as gender equality, climate change, and youth development. On gender equality, COVID-19 is threatening to roll back the gains which we have made. As the first female president in the history of my country, the burden of expectation to deliver gender equality is heavier on my shoulders. It is for this reason that I commend the initiative by the UN Women, France and Mexico to organize the Generation Equality Forum that took place in Paris in June this year, whereby my country volunteered to champion for women's economic rights and justice. Aware that being passionate about gender equality is not sufficient, my government is reviewing policy and legal frameworks in order to come up with actionable and measurable plans to ensure economic empowerment of women, but also other aspects pertaining to gender equality and gender parity. We are also working on designing and implementation gender-responsive macroeconomic plans, budget reforms, and stimulus packages with the objective of reducing the number of women and girls living in poverty.
That was Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan speaking Thursday in New York at the ongoing 76th session of the UN General Assembly. Liberian President George Weah has again said that his government is committed to pursuing a process that would heal the wounds of the victims of Liberia's brutal 14-year civil war, which took place from 1989 to 2003. But some say President Weah and his predecessor Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's government lack the political will to bring about such closure, which they argue can only come about by implementing the recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and the establishment of a war and economic crimes court. Nevertheless, President Weah, speaking virtually on Thursday at the 76th session of the UN General Assembly, reiterated his commitment to bring closure.
It is important to agree on a process that will bring closure to the wounds of the victim, thereby guaranteeing the sustenance of peace, stability, justice, and national reconciliation. As I have mentioned during my previous address to this body, the government has already begun consultation with our national legislation, the representatives of our people in this regard. Today, we can report significant progress in that we have already received a submission and recommendations from the Liberia Senate, which is the upper house of our national legislature. We are now awaiting a similar submission from the Honorable House of Representatives, after which it is our further intention to have a wider engagement with the Liberian judicial system and with our strategy international partners and organizations. It is my hope that at the end of this consultative process, a national consensus will evolve that will determine the way forward to resolving this issue. In the meantime, we continue to encourage our citizens to utilize the Palava Hot Metal, where perpetrators and victims can meet in traditional community forums to resolve their issues and their differences. It is in keeping with one of the major recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was established at the end of the civil conflict.
That was Liberian President George Manuel Weah speaking Thursday virtually to the 76th session of the UN General Assembly. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 24. The African Union mission in Somalia, known as AMISOM, and Somalia's National Army launched a center on Wednesday to better coordinate their fight against Al-Shabaab militants. The Joint Operations Coordination Center is being formed as the Islamist terrorist group threatens to disrupt Somalia's elections. Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
The joint center established at AMISOM Sector 1 headquarters in Somali capital Mogadishu was officially launched at a ceremony presided over by the Somali Army Chief of Defense Forces, General Odawai Yusuf Ragi, and the AMISOM Deputy Force Commander in charge of operations and planning, Major General William Kitsao Shume. The center is designed to enhance joint planning and coordination of military operations against Al-Shabaab. There are currently more than 20,000 peacekeepers in the country trying to keep Somalis secure from attacks by Al-Shabaab and the Islamic State. The Somali Army Chief reiterated his troop commitment, stressing the need for continuous collaboration between the Army and AMISOM. He said the success of the center will depend on the relationship of the two headquarters of SNA and AMISOM and how they coordinate in delegating work to the sectors, which then execute any such directives for successful execution and implementation. I believe our long cooperation and experiences gained over the years will help us get the best of this center so we can confront the challenges that are ahead, he added. AMISOM said the launch of the center was an important milestone in achieving a shared goal of having fully operational centers across the country.
This event marks a milestone in our endeavor to fully have all the jokes around the sectors functioning and operating. I am happy to note that the jokes in all other sectors are also already established. We will be jointly planning, coordinating, and synchronizing current and future operations together. And therefore, we will be able to optimize the utilization of combat support and combat service support together as we plan for our operations.
Security analyst Samir Ahmed of Hiral Institute says creation of the center is a step in the right direction. She says there is a need for Somali armed forces and EU peacekeepers to closely work together during this transitional period following political tensions that has slowed down the process. Somalia's indirect parliamentary and presidential elections have been delayed repeatedly this year by disputes over the process. In addition, Al-Shabaab has threatened electoral delegates who take part in the elections. According to Hiral Institute in Mogadishu, the militant group killed at least 29 people in August. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
The United Nations Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan says the country is suffering from a human rights crisis of epic proportions. The report was submitted to the UN Human Rights Council on Thursday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
9 of the 10 states in South Sudan are engulfed in what the UN Commission calls alarming levels of conflict 10 years after independence was declared and despite multiple peace treaties signed to end the civil war that erupted in 2013. Commission Chair Yasmin Suka says violence and warring in Lake States is of particular concern.
In March and July, the governors of Warup State and Lake State ordered the summary execution of more than 56 individuals, including minors. These extrajudicial killings orchestrated by governors from the ruling party are sufficiently similar, widespread and systematic, and may constitute crimes against humanity.
The report documents the prevalence of enforced disappearances, torture, rape, and conflict-related sexual violence, and the forced recruitment of child soldiers throughout the country. It finds widespread lawlessness and violence have intensified, resulting in many deaths and the forcible displacement of millions of people. A separate commission report dealing with economic crimes accuses South Sudanese political elites of illicitly diverting millions of dollars from public coffers into private bank accounts. Commission member Andrew Clapham says these practices are undermining human rights, endangering security, and keeping 80% of the population living in extreme poverty.
We have sought to clarify that the government of South Sudan has responsibility for violations of the right to health and the right to education. And the failure to provide adequate resources to fulfill these rights is related to the misappropriation of the revenue which ought to be deposited in the bank account of the state and then used to provide for education and health.
The South Sudanese Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs, Arame Kachuoli, offered a rebuttal to the report, saying he does not agree with the Commission's view of his country. He says the security situation across South Sudan is relatively calm and peaceful. He says the government is dealing with ethnic conflict through dialogue and the use of traditional courts. He calls a peace agreement reached in 2018 a significant milestone toward achieving peace in his country. He says his government deems the report on economic crimes and corruption exaggerated and questions whether the three-member panel even has a mandate to look at this issue. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Uganda's opposition leader, Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobby Wine, says he was prevented from traveling to the United States because of COVID-19 restrictions. Joel Senyonyi, a member of parliament from Wine's National Unity Platform, NUP party, says Wine was traveling to the United States through Qatar to attend his party's diaspora events, slated to be held this weekend. Senyonyi says Wine, who had recently traveled to South Africa, was stopped in Qatar because, according to U.S. COVID-19 restrictions, anyone who traveled to South Africa must quarantine for 14 days before coming to the United States. Senyonyi said Wine canceled his trip and returned to Uganda.
So Honorable Chagulani, Bobby Wine, was on the way to the U.S. There is an event that's been organized by our diaspora team, Ugandan diaspora teams. Some activities they organized and he was going to headline them. However, midway the trip, he realized something which had not been notified to him by the authorities here or even the airline. He was in South Africa a few days ago, again meeting our diaspora teams in South Africa who had organized different activities that he was part of. Now, apparently, the U.S. has one of its health measures, given the variant, the new variant in South Africa. They determined that somebody who has been to South Africa can only go to the U.S. after 14 days have elapsed from the time they departed from South Africa. Now, in the case of Honorable Chagulani, the 14 days had not elapsed since he was in South Africa. And, you know, he was not aware of that. He had not been notified by the authorities and even the airlines. So he noticed that on his way to the U.S. He had actually reached Qatar, Doha. And so when he got the information while in Doha, he decided to discontinue the trip. And so that's how he got back into Uganda.
We understand he was coming to the United States to attend his party activities. What happens now to those activities?
The activities will go on because there's other leaders that have traveled from here. Some actually got to the U.S. a few days ago. Others should be landing in a few hours. And of course, our diaspora leaders who are on the other side already. So the activities will keep happening. And we'll also be joining them virtually though.
Joel Senyonyi is a member of parliament from Bobby Wine's National Unity Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. Former Chadian President Issa Habre was ordered to pay tens of millions of dollars to victims of human rights abuses after his conviction by a special court in 2017. But by the time he died in August this year, Habre's victims have still not received a dime. As Annika Hamishla reports from Dakar, Senegal, that might soon change.
The African Union-backed court tried Chad's ex-ruler Issa Habre in Senegal and found him guilty of crimes he committed in the 1980s, a first for the continent. On September 15th, a team of AU lawyers arrived in Chad to meet with victims' advocates, lawyers, and government officials to begin the process of establishing a trust fund for Abre's victims. Abre oversaw the killing and torture of tens of thousands of people during his rule as Chad's president from 1982 to 1990. When he was convicted, the African Union was ordered to raise about $150 million that would be allocated to more than 7,000 of Abre's victims. The money was supposed to come from Abre's assets, as well as from outside contributions, but the victims still haven't been paid. Their plight gained renewed attention in August, when Abre died just 5 years into his life sentence. Jacqueline Mudena is the lead counsel for Abre's victims. She says the African Union has not made much progress. They have yet to furnish their headquarters and hire an executive secretary, among other tasks.
Donc, il reste encore beaucoup de choses à faire.
There's still a lot left to do, she says. They waited 4 years, and they don't know how many more years they'll have to wait. If it were up to her, they would have done it all in 1 week. One important task is raising money. Magitonke Traoré is the director general of Chad's Ministry of Justice. He says the Chadian government will contribute money toward the trust fund, but he doesn't know how much. He says many of the victims have already passed away, but the fund will provide relief for those who survived. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in New York, where FIFA President Gianni Infantino has emphasized the need to harmonize the international match calendar to help make football truly global during a meeting with Felix Tshisekedi, the President of the Democratic Republic of Congo and current chairperson of the African Union. The two presidents, who met on the sidelines of the 76th session of the United Nations General Assembly in New York, followed up on their most recent meeting in Kinshasa in February and reviewed the ongoing collaboration between the FIFA and the African Union. Staying with football news, former Orlando Pirates coach and analyst Michael Loftsman has joined the Egyptian national team coaching staff led by Portuguese manager Carlos Queiroz. Queiroz was appointed as the new Egypt national team manager following the departure of Hossam El Badri, who was in charge of the Pharaohs for nearly 2 years. Experienced South African manager Roger De Sar was also added to the staff, and it was he who reportedly recommended Lotzmann to Queiroz. Staying in Egypt, Al Ahly's club management has decided to fine all of the team's players and technical staff members after losing the Egyptian Super Cup match to Tali El Gish on Tuesday. Unfancied Tali El Gish caused a huge upset after beating Cairo powerhouse Al Ahly 3-2 in the penalty stage following a 0-0 draw on Tuesday, claiming their first ever Super Cup title. Additionally, Ahly's management announced they will be taking other actions in the same direction to restore the team's performance without disclosing further details. And now to basketball news. Cameroon, Mali, Nigeria, and Senegal are through to the Women's AfroBasket semifinals. Nigeria's senior women national basketball team, known as the Tigress, began the race for the last four when they dispatched Cote d'Ivoire by 72 to 56 game points. In the second quarterfinals of the day, Senegal improved their winning streak to 3-0 after beating Mozambique 74 to 46. In Thursday's third game, Cameroon's strength was stretched to the limit by an enterprising and never-say-die youthful Egyptian side in the third quarterfinals, while Mali concluded proceedings in the first three quarters in their match-up against former champions Angola to ease to a 74-53 victory as they picked the last semifinals ticket. In athletics, four-time New York City Marathon champion and women-only marathon world record holder Mary Kitiani of Kenya has announced her retirement at the age of 39. The athlete, who also won the Virgin Money London Marathon three times, said a nagging back injury was the primary reason. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, September 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a